All right, good morning.
Morning.
I'd like to begin this meeting by asking Mr. Doherty to make his presentation on today's safety content.
Thank you, Chairman Acosta, members of the board. Good morning. I want to certainly first mention, in the event of the fire alarm, when you'd exit the building, you can park through either the door here behind me or in front of me, go out to the front of the Jackson Graham Building, across the street, in front of the Building Museum, and assemble by the nut and bolt structure. For our safety contact today, I imagine everybody knows that we set our clocks back this Saturday night, Sunday morning. So early Sunday morning, November 4th, we'll be turning our clocks back 1 hour for the end of the daylight savings time. Most of us think, fantastic, I get another hour to sleep. And yes, we will. However, there's a huge difference between the society clock and the biological clock we all work from. During these time changes, there's statistically an increase in safety incidents. With the end of daylight savings times comes an increase of darkness around the time of rush hour, when traffic is at its peak and we are making our way home from work. Drivers aren't used to the decreased visibility, nor are pedestrians, which might take chances crossing roads when they shouldn't. Pedestrians walking at dusk are nearly three times more likely to be struck and killed by cars in the days following the end of daylight savings time than just before the time change. Studies have also found that auto accidents increase around the time that the clocks fall back an hour. Besides the lack of visibility, commuting in the dark can also make drivers drowsier than usual. Safety professionals have long used the start and end of daylight savings time as reminders for performing recurring safety tasks, and use the occasion of setting clocks back as a cue to check and replace the batteries in your smoke detectors and carbon monoxide alarms, prepare for winter emergency kits for your automobiles. You know, these kits can be a lifesaver if you have them in the event of a storm. Check to see that your fire extinguisher, if your fire extinguisher needs recharging. The needle should be in the green area. If it's in the red area of the fire extinguisher, it needs recharged or replaced. And besides following these safety tips, hopefully you can fall back safely with the end of daylight savings times. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Doherty. And again, I'd like to call to order the Finance and Administration Committee. Today, our agenda has three objectives. First, we're going to consider the FY13 budget amendment to recognize the receipt of security funding. Next, staff will make a presentation to update us on the preparation of the FY14 budget. And today they're going to cover they're going to provide an overview of management's work in developing a business plan in support of our strategic plan goals. And finally, staff will also give us an initial overview of the capital planning process, including major projects for the coming year, and to present key strategic questions for the board's consideration. That's on today's agenda. I also believe Mr. Bolger may have something to add at the end of the meeting, so we'll grant him some time at the end of the meeting. With that, are there any other questions about the agenda? If not, we'll move forward with the agenda as presented. Also, in front of you are the minutes of our last meeting. I would entertain a motion to adopt the minutes. Moved by Ms. Hines. Let's hear a second.
Second
by Mr. Downey. All in favor? Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
The minutes are approved as presented. You also have in front of you, just in the interest of time, you have in front of you the presentation, and I know that you've received copies of the presentation report in advance. Again, this is an administrative budget action that will align the budget with grant funds that we've already have approved. So I'm going to, today, with your concurrence, I'll skip to the presentation. Are there any questions about this matter before we move forward with it?
Question.
Mr. Downey?
Just could you explain why we're doing this again this month after we did it last month?
We should have done it last month.
Okay.
So it was approved, as indicated before, in the budget on a multi-year basis, a multi-year grant, mm-hmm. and it's just an administrative technical change that needs to happen.
Thank you, Ms. Kissel. Any other questions? Don, I'd entertain Mr. Downs.
Is it possible to get a complete listing of all of the Transit Police grant-funded positions and when those positions go off of funding? I find it very difficult to keep track of all of the numbers. I know there must be a spreadsheet someplace that...
Yeah, no, we We have that. We can provide that to you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions regarding this matter? If not, I entertain a motion to adopt this. I move by Ms. Hines.
Second.
Second by Mr. Downs. Any other questions? Not all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And the motion passes. Next up is a presentation on the FY14 business planning and budget. I believe Mr. Green is going to make this presentation.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm here today to present to you an update on our business planning process and also give you a preliminary look at our budget development process and show you the linkage between the two. Per an October 6th memo from the general manager to the board, we outlined our business planning process. We've successfully certified 25 business plans that contain over 600 actions, measurable actions, that will demonstrate how we deliver the baseline budget going in 13 and as well as 14. The general manager's business plan will build on these items, and he'll be delivering that later this year. The budget discussion will describe the resource allocation plan by mode, and this allows for the linkage of the business plans to the budget, actions by mode or by service. Also, this identifies target for process improvements and new efficiencies, which we're very interested in. And we believe we're going to show you some ways to display the information. It's easier for our customers to understand and relate to. This will also describe what the customers and the jurisdictions are getting for their investment. Next slide, please. So this is the framework for our business plans and for our investment decisions. Next slide, please. Each of the business plans, in order to be certified, must include performance measures, targets, actions, and action owners. They're also required to have at least two safety measures or actions, and other actions including quality service, how we're going to deliver service, and otherwise meet the goals of the strategic plan. So this slide is the next series of slides. I'm going to try to give you a flavor for some of the actions in the business plans, and you're going to see that these actions are cross-cutting. That is, multiple organizations have dependencies on these actions, and to improve service, for example, customer service, on-time performance, that type of thing. And also, you'll see the linkage between the business plans are really helping us link the capital budget and the operating budget because there's initiatives that cut across both programs. So the first one here, I apologize, I don't have my glasses here. Let me catch up with you here just a moment, please. The infrastructure. The first one, we're closing of safety. Jim will be here a little bit later before the safety committee to give you a very detailed update on all of the recommendations that have been closed, the corrective actions, NTB recommendations, that kind of thing. I won't get into that this time, but it's a very compelling story. On the infrastructure and maintenance, the business plans, as I said, help us link the capital and operating. The capital program for FY13 is a continuation of the 12 program. Over 90% of our investments are, of the $975 million capital program that we'll lay out for you later, is focused on safety, security, and state of good repair. The business plans are going to describe how each organization are going to meet the general manager's goal of delivering 95% of the program, and also on schedule and on budget. Tom Webster will be updating in a moment on the capital plan. As committed in FY12, we've increased our maintenance posture. That is, we can now perform more maintenance, timely maintenance at the right intervals, on our escalators, facility maintenance, track and structures, and other facilities throughout the system. Fatigue management. On the fatigue management, we started implementing our fatigue management plan this year. Some 91 positions focusing on automatic train control and power personnel. We'll be having a discussion a little bit later as we go to the next phase of fatigue management. We start focusing on our track and structures workers and also on our train operators. Security. The police, their business plan is a very detailed business plan, has over 80 actions to enhance their security posture, reduce incident response times, take a proactive response to customer complaints, and support special events such as the upcoming inaugural event. Next slide, please. Better bus. We're going to continue to improve service on the priority corridors with the December and March service changes. At the end of the fiscal year, we will have improved on-time performance by about 20% in FY13 on the corridors addressed. that we're going to maximize the utilization of on-time performance to guide and route effectiveness decision-making and looking for those underperformers and trying to enhance those routes in need of more service and more service adjustments. Many of the business plans, as I said, cross-cut and support this activity. For example, we will review the on-time performance dashboards on a weekly basis, on a daily basis, I should say, and that will help us identify and evaluate troubled routes. We'll also study the display of on-time performance in the bus garages and see if that's impacted results. Silver Line, we're preparing to roll out the Silver Line service in many areas across the system. Access, we're in the middle of a procurement right now. I think Christian's discussed that with you several times, how we're rolling out a new business model and bringing some functions in-house. Christian's plan has got a lot of actions, as you can imagine. He's very detailed business plan. This approach with access is not without risk, though, and we'll talk about that in a moment. Customer service, I like the way that Barbara described it, kind of that customer service experience before you enter the system, while you're in the system, and so forth. I think that's a very good way to talk about it. So we're improving communication using all media at our disposal. Real-time bus information signs will be put out in 13, and we're installing better signage for bus, rail, and access. We're improving our customer employee skills, and throughout the organization, there are actions in the business plans that articulate that emphasis on a better customer service. We're purchasing new service vehicles, for example, to keep the average vehicle life at targeted levels. And bus maintenance is a very detailed business plan that articulates how they're going to maintain those buses and keep those average times between failure at about 7,500 miles. And mean distance between failure, I should say, excuse me. Fare collection, you can see and you know that the smart card enhancements, such as auto reload, and we're now accepting credit cards at parking lots, we'll talk about in a moment. All these improvements make the system more customer friendly, and business plans articulate more of those. Next slide, please. The parking revenue is a real success story. We will complete the automation of parking lots on the red and green line. We have completed, the parking lot automation on red and green lines, and we'll complete the rest of the lines this year, as outlined in the business plan. We think we're going to realize about an average saving, operating savings of about $3 million per year with that action. Our system maintenance organization, just to give you a flavor of how these could be cross-cutting business initiatives, our systems maintenance has got in their business plan an initiative to identify actions to reduce the response time to respond to those parking lot, any system issues we have with the parking lots. Smart Trip, we're going to continue to work towards the elimination of the paper fare card. Smart Trip market penetration in September, the usage is 33% below September last year, so we're really making excellent progress there. Smart Trip card sales for August and September have increased 36% and 29% respectively. ADA-compliant smart card dispensers are now available throughout the system. And now with our capability on the smart web and website, we have the ability to provide rebates of $3, and we currently have 27,000 customers that have requested those rebates. Overtime management. Next slide, please. Oops, back one. On the overtime management, the general manager's identified overtime management as a key action across the organization. The business plans have many actions to help get our arms around the overtime and reduce overtime. Things such as reports and other management tools that we've been developing, they're going to help us identify the areas where we're incurring overtime and identify targets for improvement. Expedited and targeted hiring practices, combined with training, will reduce overtime by ensuring that we have the right employees and the right jobs with the right training. And wherever possible, organizations are adjusting staffing plans to make sure the work is accomplished during regularly scheduled hours. And finally, whenever possible, Metro is looking at alternative work schedules and shifts to reduce overtime while still accommodating that big weekend work that we do. We have upgraded the financial enterprise system to continue to provide transparency, accountability, and one version of the truth with respect to our data. Additional capabilities of grant management, that's in my own personal business plan, is an emphasis, and we're striving to improve the way we handle those grant funds and the way we transact and account for those funds. And the new asset management capabilities are able to value configured assets, and project managers are able to manage the expenditures of those funds in support of those assets more effectively. Material inventory management, another one of the general manager's focus along with overtime. We have over $100 million inventory, value of our inventory is about $100 million, I should say. And this is one area where improved practices are going to pay huge dividends. The FY12 materials and parts expenditures, just for your information, total about $81 million. Departments all over the organizations that manage inventory, oversee inventory, or process have proposed actions to improve the management of our inventory and the acquisition of goods and materials. Procurement, council, and construction offices, for example, are working to expedite the contracting process. And procurement is streamlining their processes and reducing cycle time. Managing the supply chain and sourcing materials, you're going to see a lot about that in the upcoming budget presentations, and that's going to be a key to our success next year. Next slide, please. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about on the budget side. We're flipping now from the business planning to the budget, and we're going to demonstrate how we're going to link those two. First of all, I thought we'd just display for you the cost of providing our services by modes. You can see that the rail, about $2.90 of every trip, cost of each trip is provided by the customer through fares. You can see that about 37 cents comes from what we call commercial revenue, and then the remainder comes from the subsidy. Bus, the story's a little bit different, $1.09 from fares, and $3.16 is the subsidy, very little from the commercial. And access, you can see there, about $3.50 is recovered in fares. Next slide, please. So on our modes, as we start this discussion and we enter the budget development process, we'll be back to you. We'll be breaking our budget down and discussing it by mode. What this slide shows is the assets operated by rail and the growth associated with the introduction of the Silver Line for FY14. For our customers, it's meaningful for them to understand that we will be increasing the number of trains in service by nearly 20% in FY14, adding 11.5 rail miles and 5 new stations. We've tried to portray our service in a manner that is meaningful to our customers. We also have revenue miles, passengers per platform hour, and many, many other measures that Dave and his staff use to manage their business. But we'll give you a higher roll-up for the purposes, and also our customers can relate to, we'll be trying to provide measures that our customers can relate to. Rail has 7,000 employees. In FY14, their total budget capital and operating, in FY13, is about $1.5 billion. That's made up of about 40% capital, 40% maintenance. The remainder is operating. Total operating and maintenance investment for FY13 is about $900 million. 76% of that is labor. 6% is propulsion, and the remainder of that operating budget goes towards parts, materials, services, those types of things. Next slide, please. The base budget for FY14 assumes a $3 million investment initiated in the priority corridor networks, and also the base of investments we made in the state of good operations this year. So we're assuming that's in the base and rolled forward. And we'll discuss the next phase of the priority corridor networks and our upcoming proposal shortly. Bus has 4,000 employees. Their budget is $736 million for FY14, or their base budget, I should say. Capital and maintenance costs make up about 25% of that budget each, with the remainder operations, very heavily operations-oriented. The bus operating and maintenance costs are about 77% labor, 7% fuel, and the remainder, again, for materials, parts, those types of things. Next slide, please. On the access side, Christian's made many presentations to the board over the last year outlining Metro's move to the new business model for access services. We anticipate vendor selection and award early in the year, next year. The new service will be phased in, running concurrently with the existing service until the switchover is complete at the beginning of the next fiscal year in July. We've discussed in many presentations recently, we feel there is some risk associated with entering into the new model. We'll keep you apprised of our progress. Metro has 42 employees supporting their service. The annual investment in access is about $125 million. All but about 10 of that is operating, the $10 million for the purchase of new equipment and infrastructure. The operating budget of 115 primarily funds the service contract, about $90 million currently, with the remaining costs going to fuel and access personnel. So as we develop our budget, we're developing our budget along two tracks. We're developing the base. That is, we're taking the FY13 budget, we're applying inflation to those categories, and we're also annualizing those investment decisions that were included in the 13 budget, such as the priority corridor networks and the state of good bus operations. We're annualizing those, and then that baseline is going on that track. We're also scrubbing that base, looking for further efficiencies, trying to keep those costs down, and we'll be back to you in December to report that baseline cost. At the same time, we're entertaining new initiatives. I know in the October 6th memo, the general manager outlined to you a challenge he made to all of us to look for new initiatives that would introduce further efficiencies, reduce costs, better ways to operate our services, and enhance performance. And we got a lot of initiatives, and the executive team is working through those. We hope to have a recommendation to the general manager next week. And then when we're back to you in December, we'll be relating those to you. I've got, just up on the screen here, I've got a few categories of the types of initiatives that we're entertaining. Back one, please. Forward one. Keep going. Right there. Thank you. Fatigue management. I mentioned earlier that our fatigue management plan, we're working on finalizing that plan. We will be back to you in December to describe how we propose to roll that out. Right now, we're looking at the next organizations would be track and structures, and then the rail operators. We'll be back with more information on that. Employee and workplace safety, we have several initiatives we're looking at there. Better bus priority corridors, we'll be back to you with a proposal on which priority corridors we would see as next. I think Jack sent you a recent memo. And customer improvements, we're looking at employee training, that type of thing. There's several initiatives in there. Under financial stability, we would look at improving our time collection methodology, again, related to the directive by the general manager to reduce our overtime. We're looking at better ways to capture and record time and overtime particularly. And I think I talked previously about the materials and inventory management. Next slide, please. So it all comes together. We'll be back to you in December. We'll have our base budget formalized. We'll have the new initiatives, and we'll account for risk. I just want to mention that, as I mentioned to you in May again and again in September, the funding deficit was about, from 13 to 14, was about $75 million. We were here in September. We talked to you about initiatives that we had achieved and actions we were going to take to reduce that funding shortfall. We think it's about $25 million. Through this process over the coming weeks, we'll put even more pressure on that, and we'll report back to you in December. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Green. Again, for the public and for our board, we are undertaking a number of briefings prior to the introduction of the general manager's budget next January in order for us to get some background on what's going into the budget and also an opportunity for us to have a discussion about some of the assumptions and other issues that may affect the environment for the FY14 budget. And with that, I'd like to open it up for discussion. Mr. Downs and then Mr. Downey.
I appreciate the scheduling of the Silver Line Service Plan for the Customer Service Committee meeting in December. I hope that that is also a time to be able to frame the context for Silver Line impact on the coming year's budget. That's the place where you would begin to define the impact for the next fiscal year's budget of the full operation of phase one of the Silver Line. I think it's important for the public and the jurisdictions to understand the impact that that's having on the operating budget numbers. We're absorbing, in effect, the beginning of a 20% expansion in the rail system, and it has specific operating costs that have to be recognized in the operating budget. We're doing that. But it's a better context than we've got about it just being listed as one of a number of factors implementing the budget. So I think breaking out the operating cost impacts, the total impact on the fiscal year 14 budget as part of that service plan is really important.
Thank you. Mr. Downing?
Yeah, three quick questions. In one of the slides, there was reference to funding to move towards automatic train operation in 2014, but I just want to be sure we're not assuming that will be there. We've got to prove it out, as we'll talk about in the safety committee. On the chart that showed attributes of the system, number of trains, et cetera, 13 versus 14, I assume 13 is pre-Silver Line.
Yes.
Yeah, it's, even though it will be in operation for part of 13, this is looking at the whole change for phase one. The other, in last month's discussion, we talked about risk. And one of the risks we, at least preliminarily said we would take is not budget for government shutdown. I would suggest we take a look at the last half a dozen years where between politics and weather there's been at least one shutdown every year, and we might want to at least appropriately reflect that in the budget.
Thank you, Mr. Downing. And Ms. Hines?
That was Mr. Downing, so now it's Ms. Hines, right? I have a couple questions. On page 22, which is the revenue source per mode, periodically I get emails from people saying various things about the split in how we compare to other jurisdictions in terms of the cost of to the rider versus the overall cost, et cetera. And I don't know if we have comparative data that we could share, but I would appreciate that because I was actually surprised to see the bus number as high as it was here. So you know, maybe that's my not paying attention, but I would appreciate it. My second comment is that all the, those kind of shorthand things, Bill, that you added to the slides by mode, would be very helpful to have, if we could have one page per mode that kind of hit those points so they're at our fingertips. It was just, again, a very nice summary. But the real thing I wanted to focus attention on for a moment is we've ended up with three buckets in your presentation related to the strategic plan goals, and we have four goals. And I take very much that these things are all intertwined, but we are improving regional mobility and connecting communities pretty specifically with the expansion of the Silver Line and some of the bus work that we've been doing also. And so I think we have to find a way to say that that this addresses all of the board's strategic goals. Although I think we all know that if we really want to improve regional mobility, we have to do way more than what we currently have programmed for, we have funding for. But I think we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that progress is being made across those. And those little shorthands tend to leave you thinking that there isn't anything going on that makes that makes progress on that goal.
Good point. Any other questions? Staff? Okay, thank you, Mr. Green. We'll move forward to our next agenda item, which is FY14 capital budget, and Mr. Webster will be making this presentation. Again, just to put this in some context, we've done a lot of work in moving our Metro Forward program over the last couple of years, and we've made very substantial progress in terms of meeting our needs for a safe and steady state of maintenance. And in the process, we've also reduced the backlog of capital needs that we have. But I also think over time, our capital funding requirements are evolving. And this spring, as you'll see in this presentation, the staff will be undertaking a update of the capital needs inventory that will identify specific required investments that will link to our strategic and business plans. So that will help us inform our future decision-making in terms of capital improvements. So we're going to hear today a progress report on preparing the general manager's FY14 budget with respect to the capital program. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Webster.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity. The purpose of this presentation, sorry. The purpose of this presentation is to provide a status update on the financial status of our capital improvement program and to preview our capital, our CIP development process, and also to lay out a few, as the chairman mentioned earlier, policy issues, highlight some questions that are important going forward. Metro has made some significant progress over the past couple of years in delivery of the capital program. In fiscal year 2012, we invested $770 million, which is 26% more than the prior year. In September, Rob Troop was here at the committee and provided an update on the year-end progress, went through major accomplishments for the year, and provided a preview of our plan for fiscal 13. Our current updated plan for fiscal 13 is $975 million investment plan. That's made up of the $802 million that the board approved back in May for the fiscal year, plus the rollover of unspent prior year funds. Rob will be back into the committee in December to provide the committee with a first quarter progress report on the delivery of the 13 program. So I won't jump the gun on that. Next slide, please. Metro's current six-year CIP is a $5.3 billion program. The focus of that program is overwhelmingly on safety, state of good repair, and performance-focused investments. So there's two categories of projects, safety performance and state of good repair, and then customer and demand projects. While many of our projects have characteristics that fit into both categories, the purpose here is to distinguish between projects that are investments that rebuild, replace, and rehabilitate Metro's existing assets, and the other category is projects that enhance or add to Metro's capital assets. I think it's pretty clear from this chart that our focus is safety and state of good repair. The updated financial plan for fiscal 13 to 18 is a $5.3 billion plan. It's heavily reliant on federal PREA funds and federal formula grant funds. State and local investments, including matching those federal PREA and grant funds and formula grant funds, and additional system performance funds above and beyond what's required to match the federal funds. I think this chart shows that half of our program is supported by federal funding, and that sustained federal funding is critical to our ability to deliver the program. Fiscal 13, our capital budget is supported by federal funds that have already been appropriated, so there's some certainty there. The out years of our six-year plan, 14 to 18, are considerably more uncertain as they're dependent on future appropriations of federal funds each year, federal PREA and formula funds. So sequestration or other reductions in federal funding or to our assumptions about federal funding would have a significant impact on the CIP. In the event that federal funds are reduced, safety would continue to obviously be the highest priority, but other capital projects, depending on the extent of the reductions, would be subject to deferral or reduction. Benefits of having a six-year expenditure-based CIP is that we have a plan already in place for next year. The tentative investment plan looks very similar to our FY13 plan and our FY12 plan before that. It continues many of the investments and projects that are already underway. I think there is a clear linkage between many of these investments and the new strategic framework. Projects have impacts on each one of these goals. I won't run through these, but the point in the process where we are right now, we're reviewing the status of current projects, updating budgets and cash flow schedules for projects that are underway. The development process also includes an update of our funding forecast. So each year we take a look at our six-year plan for or forecast for federal grants and state and local support. There'll be some changes in the 14 to 18 timeframe, so the next year budget and the 5 years that follow that. But the bulk of the change will really be in fiscal 19, which is the year that we're adding on to our six-year plan. I think that's important to emphasize. Much of the work is already underway or planned to start. The new things are likely to come in at fiscal 19 or in fiscal 19. Next slide, please. So our capital needs inventory was first created in or developed in 2009. Capital needs inventory was based on management's assessments of the needs of the system over a 10-year period, fiscal 11 to fiscal 20. That needs inventory was updated in 2011 to include safety-related projects that came to light after the initial CNI was developed, and it now totals about $13 billion. It's important to note that capital needs are sort of a constantly evolving thing. So this is a snapshot, a moment in time in 2011. Our needs were approximately $13 billion. As we learn more about what our needs are, as we plan and design projects, as bids come in for projects that are included in the CIP, or as regulations or requirements change, our estimates become sort of out of date or dated. So this is an evolving thing. As the chairman mentioned earlier, we are planning to conduct a comprehensive update of our capital needs inventory next spring and summer to look at sort of where the progress we've made and what the needs are going forward. We plan to meet with the jurisdictions, the JCC, in the coming months to discuss sort of criteria for what is a metro capital need and to discuss some of those policy issues. So in the $13 billion needs inventory, you see the distribution here again of the projects that are in the state of good repair, safety, performance category, and the customer demand category. About 75% or $10 billion of the $13 billion needs are in the safety and rebuilding category, and the other 25% is in customer demand. So this chart shows our $13 billion need inventory. In fiscal 11, it's a little bit hard to see, but maybe clearer on your in the page in front of you. The fiscal 11 and 12 investments totaled $1.4 billion. Our plan, our updated plan for the current six-year period, FY 13 to 18, is $5.3 billion. Our projection, if funding levels are sustained for fiscal 19 and 20, is another $1.6 billion. So over that 10-year period, we would invest approximately $8 billion with sustained funding at current levels. That leaves another $5 billion of capital needs based on our 2011 inventory that would go unfunded. So this sort of illustrates that we have $10 billion of state of good repair and performance needs, an additional $3 billion of customer and demand needs that were identified. At existing funding levels, we will only accomplish about 60-65% of that in the 10-year period. The next slide highlights some policy issues and some questions for the capital program going forward for the committee's consideration. First issue is the issue I mentioned earlier, financial plan stability. In the event of reduced federal funding, this plan is not possible. so sustained funding is critical. We've discussed a lot. There's been a lot of focus on Metro's need to reduce the backlog of deferred maintenance. It's also important to highlight that in addition to reducing that backlog, sustained investment in replacing and rehabilitating the existing assets is necessary to prevent future backlogs from reoccurring. So in addition to reducing the backlog, focusing and identifying what the steady state of maintenance requirements are for the system. As we mentioned, we've ramped up capital spending over the past 2 years. As we continue to ramp up spending, we also need to continue to focus on how to deliver the program more efficiently. And as our current program is, 6-year program is very focused on safety, state of good repair, and rebuilding the system, we need to be planning and preparing for future investments that improve enhance capacity and enhance the customer experience. Just a few listed: core capacity investments, a car train, bus priority enhancements, and the fare collection system. Without substantial additional investments, these program areas will not be possible. We are currently planning, and there are some projects included in the existing CIP to prepare for these investments, but these are long-term needs that are currently unmet in our 6-year plan. Just a few things on the next steps. Over the next 2 months or so, we will be coordinating with the jurisdictions and other stakeholders as we develop our proposed CIP and annual work plan. In December, I mentioned earlier, Mr. Troop will be back with a quarterly progress update on the FY13 capital plan for capital budget. And also in December, we'll be presenting the proposed annual work plan to the jurisdictions and to the board. With that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Webster. And I'd like to open it up for discussion. I believe Mr. Dinkle has a question. Then Mr. Downs. Mr. Downs.
Thank you for your briefing. I guess my question or recommendation is with regard to this sequestration issue. I'm assuming we're planning on what happens if, in fact, it occurs. In other words, are we developing any contingencies of what programs or projects would be deferred if, in fact, it occurred, if we went off the fiscal cliff and we had to cut projects? And if we've done this, and certainly I would recommend we do this, are we articulating what projects won't be done if, in fact, it occurs to our congressional delegation and to our riders? I think we need to kind of anticipate that whatever actions we can hope from the congressional delegation during the transition from the election to the new president or the continuation of the continuing president will occur. So I'm a little concerned about articulating to folks exactly what's going to happen if we go off that fiscal cliff.
Part of it is exactly where we'll end up with sequestration. Right now, as I recall, on the formula funding side, we seem to do okay. On the PREA funding side, we lose some money, 8%, that's around $12 million, something like that. So I'm not ringing the alarm bell now saying that. However, the discussion is going to evolve, and as the discussion carries forward, we will be prepared to say, depending on where they're headed, what the impact will be on us in terms of our ability to invest capital. Where will we invest capital and where will we not have the money to do what we need to do? Well, we look right now, there's not a significant impact, but that could change because the discussion is just at the beginning as far as I'm concerned.
Mr. Downs?
I was curious about on the page 30 of 42 under the 2013-18 CIP financial plan, $440 million worth of debt strategy, which is a new appearance under 14 to 18.
Actually, that was part of the new capital funding agreement that we put in place to fund the CIP, and it's primarily for debt for the new rail cars that were coming in.
Is it year-specific in terms of debt issuance?
It's depending upon the delivery of the cars, and it will be done in tranches as they get delivered and get accepted.
Okay. The second is a suggestion about an item that is of minor cost in the capital plan, and that is we don't need much of an example about the dangers of tunnel flooding from storm surge. I don't know if there is a current analysis of the vulnerability of low-lying metro rail stations to significant storm surge and what the capital implications would be for solving some of those vulnerabilities. I'm reminded that there is a picture in the archives of the mall taken some like 1922-23 with boats on the mall and water depth of 3 or 4 feet on the mall. It is Tiber Creek came back, and it is still there, and it is a vulnerability of the system and the region. It's hard to imagine what the national government would look like without the core of the system operating. So is there a current engineering analysis of the vulnerability to storm surge and a look at what protective measures might be necessary?
I can give you a little bit of history on this. Over the course of the years, the agency has invested in areas where they have extended, say, for instance, some of the vent shaft plenums towards they would be a little bit less susceptible to flooding, for example, like Foggy Bottom and such. One of the things that took place is whenever they reclassified the status of the mall pretty much to a swampland type environment, that has prompted us to start looking at a whole new study and reviews. There is some work, for example, that is taking place on the National Mall right now where they're actually reburning the soil and everything else around one of our vent shafts, and our staff is in direct communication with them to try to get something extended. It's been an issue, as y'all have noted, it's been here from day one of this. We've got a lot of comments and insight on that in the National Mall departments that are running that seem to be responsive now, especially with New York and stuff taking place. We've looked across the board as far as Anacostia, you know, across there. And so we are continuing to review that since they reclassified the potential of that of the mall area itself along with the other areas.
What I would like to do for the board is give them a report on the vulnerabilities that have been identified previously, what has been done, what remains to be done.
Yeah.
The last suggestion, and it wouldn't take a lot, but I feel some degree of urgency about capacity enhancements going forward. A number of these have incredibly long tail times. Environmental review, preliminary engineering, scoping, the planning process, potential federal funding, that every year there is not some minimal investment in a clear priority list of projects that the authority wants to pursue is another year further out. And if we're 7 years out already, to go another year in the capital budget without specifying allocations of funding, capital funding for specific project, environmental scoping, preliminary engineering, is to put us further behind. And I think it would be appropriate to have some listing of those projects in a priority fashion that the board could lay its hands on and that could see a specific application of the beginning of a pipeline.
Thank you. Mr. Downey?
Yeah.
And then Mr. Martins.
A couple of questions. $5.3 billion over 6 years. Again, not meeting all the needs, but an important level of investment. That's about $900 million a year. We have not achieved that in any year yet. We're hopeful, but not even committed to achieving the full amount. There's 85% of 975 is going to do 90%. That might get us there. But I'd like to see, when we bring the budget up, the out-year projections that we not leave money on the table within the 5.3. That may involve the debt strategy, but I think we should not keep – we're going to need to keep the pressure on. Relating to that, the chart that showed the unfunded gap over the 10 or 11 years, that was page 38. I would like to see that disaggregated between the state of good repair needs and the other needs, because I don't want to see us trading off on that unless we've made a conscious decision. So I think that would be a useful thing to have. On the federal money, obviously there are risks out there. Sequestration itself is not the worst risk, because most transit money will not be sequestered. But if sequestration achieves its original purpose of focusing on other ways to cut the budget, we will be at risk and need to be responding. I did wonder, and I couldn't figure it out from what we were provided, whether the increased level of formula funding that was produced by MAP 21, the new State of Good Repair program, was actually reflected in here, or whether that's maybe an upside potential, but you can get me the answer to that. And then lastly, on the storm surge issue, some properties are now actually figuring out that they have to raise their stations. I've got a picture of one in Bangkok, which is now about 10 steps to get up before you go down. But it's, you know, one of the things we may have to look at, especially the critical areas on the mall that are now expected to flood as opposed to being surprised when they flood.
Mr. Barnes?
Quick comment and then a question. You don't have to go back to the 1920s for the flooding of the mall. I remember 1972. I think it was it Agnes? Was that the I can remember flying into National Airport in 1972 and looking down, and the entire mall was underwater, and a good bit of downtown was underwater. And the mayor of Alexandria knows that Alexandria was totally underwater. So we don't have to go back to 1972, but an awful lot of money has been spent by the Corps of Engineers since Agnes to try to make sure that something that bad won't happen to the mall again. I don't know if they've been completely successful, but I know they've spent an awful lot of money trying to redirect future floods so that downtown Washington is, and I know Alexandria spent a lot of money trying to redirect the situation there. A question, Tom, the $13 billion, does that include some of the things we've talked about with respect to strategic planning, you know, the 2 million more people who are going to move here and the need to start building another tunnel under the river and expanding the core stations so that we don't have the kind of overcrowding that we're already experiencing? Is that $13 billion, does that address the kinds of issues we've been talking about in our strategic plan?
Some, but not all. So there are needs included in the inventory for expansion of to all eight car trains, capacity enhancements at stations like Gallery Place and Union Station. But it is the capital needs inventory was developed with the 2010 or 2011 to 2020 timeframe. So part of our comprehensive update next year, we'll look at the time frame again and maybe expanding that time frame to include future capacity and investments.
But there will be money for, as Tom pointed out before, the planning, early planning to get you there, as well as preliminary engineering. Not the big bucks later for the construction because of the time period, but the early stuff that you have to spend to get there.
Thanks. I'm going to follow up on that because I actually think it would be useful for all of us to, again, in the shorthanded kind of way, be able to look at it and say, just as Mort said, let's separate out the safety and state of good repair. Can you give us a few talking points? I was reminded on Friday when I was at the Region Forward Coalition that we're not the only people sort of looking at transportation, and TPB is being tasked to take a look as well and come up with a plan to expand. And I think the more we can all get on the same page and talk about the same things, the better off we're going to be. So whatever this priority list is, we really need to make sure that it is being communicated well to the other planning bodies who are talking about it, whether it's MBTC or the Maryland group or TPB, because the critical thing from my point of view is that we all have the right message as we go into whatever this shift is going to be, because regardless of who is president, this region has to keep moving. And the investment has to continue, or the consequences are clear, regardless of who is the president. And I think that that is part of what the message has to be to the political leadership. And it has to come with some price tag understandings, because backing off has immediate consequences, both in safety and in expansion. And so perhaps you can all help us frame that message. You know, we when we were looking at the maintenance issues and we were saying, you know, if we overinvest now, we can get to this state of good repair. If you look at it on a long term, that eventually frees up some money, right? And so how quickly we get to that gives us other money that we can invest in other things. We need to start explaining that in relatively simple terms so that other people get it. Because where this $5 billion is going to come from is out of these shared pockets. We got to start talking about that more clearly, I think, no matter what.
Mr. Downing?
Yeah, just following up on that, we never reach a point where the state of good repair drops to zero.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I didn't mean to say that. I meant the overinvestment.
Once it's stabilized, there will be a wedge of potential.
I totally.
We've got to continue the message that it goes on forever.
Right, but it goes on at a reduced level from what we're hopefully spending now, because we achieve it and then we maintain it. Yeah, no. Sorry, I didn't mean to say
right.
that.
That's the issue with the steady state that you've raised. Any other questions for the staff? If not, thank you, Mr. Webster. And I believe Mr. Bulger has a statement or comment that he would like to make regarding Metro Access.
Thank you. Members of the board, this has to do with the Metro Access issue in the District of Columbia. Mr. Chairman, thank you for putting this on the agenda. On behalf of the District of Columbia, I can make a formal request to you as the Chair of the Finance Committee and to Madam Chairman. The district is concerned about the timing and the information concerning the District of Columbia and the District of Columbia taxi cab participation in the future Metro Access program, as well as how we're going to coordinate Metro Access with district cabs. The regulatory structure that governs that process, the time frame going forward, on the award of this billion-dollar Metro Access contract. In addition, we're interested to know what the role of the board will be in this Metro Access contract or contracts, the role of the ACC, and I therefore ask for a briefing at the next Finance Committee, and on behalf of the District of Columbia, we are prepared to submit a written jurisdictional request regarding this matter, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Bulger. Again, you're going to submit a written statement on behalf of the jurisdiction.
Request
onto the staff, and I believe the staff will then receive that and probably prepare something back in writing to all of our members so they have a better understanding of what the issues are. And at that point in time, we'll make a determination whether we want to schedule it a follow-up based on the written response for this committee or a for another committee. So I guess that's just basically the timetable. So we'll just give staff some time to respond. And again, we'll send both your written request as well as the staff's response back and circulate that amongst the entire board. And then we'll.
Chairman, I would only ask that this be post haste
yes.
rather than post Thanksgiving, post Christmas.
Okay. We'll work with Mr. Sarles and his staff to make sure that this is handled expediently. Any other questions regarding this request? Any other matters to come before this committee? If not, this committee meeting is adjourned. Thank you.